Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The preacher and the teacher. Mustard and Johnson. It's Mustard and Johnson on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Talk all things socks, pats, B's and C's. Right now with Mustard and Johnson on the WEEI Sports Radio Network at WEEI.com.
It is a rare hour number three. King James taking the weekend off, or at least today. Red Sox playing a day-night doubleheader.
So maybe he was afraid to come in today.
He's resting. Apparently, it's going to be a steel cage match showdown next Saturday. I can't wait. Just 7 days away. Mark James, mano a mano.
Father's Day weekend.
Father's Day weekend. It's going to get ugly in here.
Going to be Mother's Day.
He's already run Evan Drellick out of town. He ran John Tomasi off the television. Who else was left in his wake? Oh, Dickerson doesn't even want to work at the radio station after working with Mark with a C for a few weeks and months. Now Andy Hart's going to get his turn. And apparently, Mark had some less than kind comments about Andy Hart, who I think is very good on the radio. He's got a great voice. He's very analytical, very eloquent. And he's going to be joining Mark. And Mark apparently... Now, Eamon, what was the accusation that that Mark with a C hurled at Andy Hart?
He was calling him short.
Short, but he didn't use that word?
No, he did not.
He used the M word.
Yes.
Which isn't as bad as the N word, but if you
not
are
nearly.
If you are vertically challenged.
Why don't you go through the whole alphabet?
Yeah, if you are vertically challenged, it's not a word you'd want to hear. And he happened to use it several times. We couldn't find any taped evidence, however, of
short
it.
Short people.
There was an 8.5-minute gap on the tape of the morning show.
Shockingly.
Expletives were all deleted, so we couldn't find it. But apparently, Andy Hart, in anticipation of this new pairing, had some words in response.
Best Better friends. Question. Who do you hate the most?
Who do I?
I'm going to get to that.
That was the follow-up, what? Chris. Come on.
Jesus.
Do you ever see 60?
Got 48 coming up in 2 minutes.
No, wait, oh, you never seen six mutants again before? 60 mutants?
Hate the most on-air or off-air?
Both.
On-air you.
Okay.
Off-air would probably be Mark James, even though I haven't really started working with him yet. He rubs me the wrong way. Seems like just a really phony, fake TV guy that is the opposite of what I'm about.
No, he is the deepest guy I know. What's phony about?
Well, how do you even know him off here?
Because I see him around Gillette a little bit, or just he just seems very fake to me.
Star for attention, fame seeking loser.
Okay, so fake and phony are the two epithets.
Sounds like it'll be a really good show.
It's going to be good. I can't
just
wait.
Seems compatibility. Very
compatibility. Yeah, well, a lot of compatibility, chemistry already. Nitro and glycerin together. It's going to be explosive. Andy Hart. We have a name for the show because we had. We had the Pony Express, Dickerson and James. That was pretty good. I don't know what names we had for Drellick or Tomasi with Mark with a C, but
he's running through everybody.
Yeah. So anyway, he'll be here back to his regularly scheduled time at 11 o'clock with yet another co-host, Andy Hart.
And he just seems very fake to me.
We shall find out if we're in the same room together, they'll find a true connection. 617-779-7937. We're here till 12 o'clock. It's Mustard and Johnson, and we shall start off with this hour with Steve down in New Jersey. Hey, Steve.
Matt, thanks for taking my call.
No question.
The only thing I can relate this hockey incident. I refereed basketball. I did Division III, some Division I basketball for 30-some years. Before the game, officials usually have a pregame. I'm sure they have it in hockey. We have it for 20, 30 minutes in basketball. Officials have certain areas. We know that. Certain areas where they call. But I always used to say, if something is blatant in my area, somebody better get it. You don't want to go home and say, we should have called that. And then the only thing you can say is, it should have been called. Whether the other referee, I know he's a distance away. I know the linesmen usually don't make that call.
Right.
Somebody has to get it.
Right, and you can't use replay.
Area,
yep.
No. And your egos, I know officials have egos just like players. Sometimes you have to let your ego down a little bit and say, look, the other guy, and it's happened to me, the other guy made a great call in my area, which was blatant. I don't mean a tip, no chippy foul, but a blatant foul like that. Somebody has to get it.
Absolutely. You know, there's another official on the ice. A linesman can't make the call, but they can certainly advise an official, a referee, to make a call, even though they can't make it themselves. You have four guys in stripes on the ice. One of them had to have seen it. No question about that.
I agree.
Yeah. Now, Steve, why, as a Jerseyite, you're interested in this series?
You know, I don't care. I like college basketball. I don't watch the NBA. I do like the hockey playoffs. I mean, I have no big interest whether it's the Bruins or the Blues, whether they win or lose. So, I mean, it's not that, but I do enjoy the hockey playoffs very much. And I look at it as an official also. And, I mean, look, I've made calls also. You go home and you say, I should have done it maybe. Like, we should have done it this
right.
way. Where it got too rough in basketball. But you really don't want – I've never had a game, you know, with that – the consequences like the NHL playoffs.
Right.
But, you know, you've got to get that.
That's interesting. You're a basketball official, yet you don't want to watch the NBA. Why? You don't like the way the game's officiated, or what is it?
Well, no, listen, I think even the officials in the NBA are very good. I know they get criticized. I'm from the days, and I'm 69. I'm from the old Red Holtzman days and the Busha days, and it was a different type of basketball, the Red Auerbach days. And I don't enjoy this three-point shooting, and I don't enjoy the way it's played.
Yeah, they're going to move the line
you,
back, you know.
Moving back even more, huh?
Yeah.
Well, three-pointers become, I mean, they're not necessarily easy. I mean, if you even watched the game last night, the Raptors were at one point, I think, 2-for-15, the beginning of that game, and got hot a little bit later when they needed to. But it's become a three-point game, no question about it. And percentages say that's the right thing to do. But it's difficult for a classic basketball fan, whether you love those hit-the-open-man Red Holtzman teams of the early 70s or the Auerbach eras of the 60s and 70s or the Bird. We've seen some great basketball over the years. I like watching the NBA now. I have been a big NBA fan really in the last 15, 20 years. I do think the 21st century brand of basketball is pretty good. But at times, I think there is the over-reliance on the three-pointer. And I'd like to see maybe a little balance as far as offensive shots are concerned. We certainly haven't seen it with the way that three-pointer is dominated these days. Andy in Framingham, you're next on Sports Radio WEEI. Hello, Andy.
Hey, guys. I'd just like to say this.
Where you been, man?
He
calls every week.
Out and about. Hey, I did want to say, I think they need the Bruins, that is. Tuukka is still a game tonight. I think he's got to be Tim Thomas-like. They're a little bit out of physical disadvantage.
Are they
guys
tonight
mentioned
or tomorrow
that.
Night? Tomorrow
Pardon
night.
Pardon me? Tomorrow night, yeah. Sunday night. I sure wish they had Lucic back in the fold.
Okay.
I can use a physical presence.
Yeah, someone mentioned that last week. That's
I'd rather have Neely.
You
see what he did to that water bottle.
I know. I realize that. But so I do think, I mean, if he steals this game, they come back, they win it. Obviously, if they don't, it's over.
Well, you can argue he's just stolen it.
What'd you say, Larry? I'm sorry, I jumped all over you.
I'm used to that.
Yeah.
You can argue that Tuukka has pretty much stolen a lot of games for them during this series.
He played pretty well, but I mean, he needs to steal this one on Sunday.
Well, now, do you agree with me?
I think this is a defining moment. This could really make his career.
Well, he needs one because he hasn't had a defining moment.
Has the ability to do that. Well, they would have to play with him, obviously. He can't do it by himself.
Well, here's my point. I think, believe it or not, I know it's hard. I've been saying it all morning. It's hard for people around here to believe this. I think there's more pressure on the Blues to get the job done in game number 6.
I would agree with that. They've got the whole city of St. Louis is feeling this because they've lost. They lost professional football teams, and the Cardinals have lost, et cetera, they're the D team in that city.
Who's going to wave the flag for them? Who would you use?
Steve D'Albano, the defenseman for the old Blues. Are you there?
Yeah, we're right here.
I think I would do well like a lead balloon.
Andy.
Can I mention something about Irving real quick?
Sure.
I heard Rob Bradford Sunday talk about Irving. He made a comparison to Paul Beers that he needs to mature, et cetera. He's only 26 years of age. He's playing such a position which demands leadership. I don't know if two more years here would make a difference. I wouldn't put all the blame on him for last year. I think the biggest problem they had was Hayward getting hurt, and he was only at 70%.
Yeah, no question.
Well, the biggest problem they had was the insistence of using him anyway. And he
was a big issue.
He wasn't,
well,
ready,
hurt
to,
well,
he
wasn't
on. Ready to play.
He played well against Indiana.
Okay.
And he played well in game one against Milwaukee. And everybody's right. Praising, oh, okay. He's back into form.
Four games out of 82, and you're going to think that's well.
Now, and there was complaint.
If you're a younger guy, like Brown or Tatum and the like, and you're sitting on the bench, and this guy's getting you a minute.
Well, especially Brown.
Yeah.
Well, that's where Stevens made a mistake in that regard. I'm surprised they pushed Hayward in that direction.
Not Stevens. You criticize Stevens?
Yeah.
Well, you can.
Oh, there's
a lot
of resentment that Brad was using his college guy
I won't go that far. Yeah. I mean, he just felt they were waiting for him to bust out of it. And, you know, with injuries, and in particular this particular injury, it may take a whole year. So if he comes back where he's 90%, that's a major improvement. I mean, he attacks the rim. He can play at both ends of the floor. He can run the floor. I mean,
That wasn't last year.
Right. That was not last year.
And you know what, Andy? The other thing is, when you're playing for Utah, you can have all the gifts in the world. It's a lot easier being a star in an obscure NBA outpost than it is playing for the Boston Celtics.
Let me say this real quick, though, if I may. If he goes to New York, meaning Brooklyn, and he teams up with Russell, or they get rid of Russell, where are they? I mean, where are they with him? What does he intend to do? Why is it so important for him to leave? I don't understand.
Because he feels that these kids don't understand how to win, and he also
they're gonna understand in Brooklyn,
right? But he's recognized also his lack of ability to bring those kids to a point where they can be successful.
Who's going to be the leader on that team in Brooklyn?
The owner in New York,
Now, he's
crazy. I mean, his agent needs to sit him down and have a real heart-to-heart conversation with him.
But isn't this going to be a package deal on some level? If Kyrie goes to Brooklyn, it could be Kawhi. It could be Kevin. We don't know. I don't think it's going to be Kyrie on his own. That's my point. I think
it was Devin Durant, and he's back where he started with Cleveland. This kid's got to make up his mind what he wants to do. I
think he has.
The hope is they can do a sign and trade. That would be fine.
I was listening to the Round Mound of Sound, or maybe with some other NBA expert who knows all the ins and outs.
Lou?
What's that?
Lou?
Dale, I think.
Okay.
And I don't know if you can actually do the sign and trade the way that a lot of the fans have proposed to send Kyrie, so at least you can get something for him. I don't know if that can happen or not.
Well, he would have the call on that. Isn't that correct? Let's say if he wanted to go to the Lakers, per se, and they would sign a contract with the Celtics and move him to L.A. for a package of players.
Yeah, I don't know if they can do that. I don't know if that's on the table or not, but certainly something to look into, because you don't want to see Kyrie just say, bye-bye, Boston, without getting any compensation. But that looks like is exactly what's going to happen. Let's go to our buddy down in Buzzards Bay. Danny, you're next on Sports Radio.
WEI. Danielson.
You there?
How are you?
Hey. I've been shedding a tear all weekend after watching that D-Day celebration remembrance, Larry, you know?
That was great.
Yeah,
oh.
Especially those moving words from our fearless leader. I was so inspired.
I thought he did a good job.
He was able to read the script without screwing up and going off topic.
He's better than you early in the show.
You have to, just divert to that. And can you just
you're the one who brought it up.
Well, I'm talking about the veterans there and the anniversary. You
that's
have
right.
To just
that's
pull
right.
That policy
well, let's see.
Every
yeah.
time, Craig.
Right.
You
let's
just,
see now. What war did Trump serve in? Oh, that's right. He had bone spurs.
You know,
sorry.
I wanted to make honorable mention.
Can the guy do anything without you people ripping him?
No.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's my job.
Any profanity to add to that?
They went over there. They honored. It was about the veterans. It wasn't about him.
Well, certainly he wasn't a veteran, as we know. Those bone spurs prevented him from serving.
I know. And neither was Obama, and neither was Bush.
He wasn't drafted.
Okay.
He wasn't drafted. Bush was. Bush got out of it.
Look, you know something? I didn't call for that. You know,
Danny, everything goes on this show, buddy.
Right.
All topics. I love how people call. They want to control the narrative.
You're the one that brought Trump up.
Just
brilliant.
He didn't want to hear it.
Well, because you criticized him.
You could have just said it was a nice...
Danny,
a nice,
you know what? It's an open exchange.
But he said, but it was a nice...
Okay.
But it was a nice presentation.
Yes,
why do
Danny,
you have to ruin it?
Thank you. It was a wonderful,
then you're
moving,
gonna break out swearing and everything.
Awe-inspiring,
you people can't hear
spine-tingling
yeah,
presentation.
You people can't hear the swearing because they keep taking it
thank you, Dan.
I'm sorry. My dad was a veteran, and he
so
was a
mine, and so
PLW
was mine.
And,
so was mine.
So was mine. Right.
I mentioned it never gets mentioned on sports airs anyways. You don't even honor the nothing.
My father was in the Revolution.
Danny, listen. Day-Day is the most important event in the 20th century.
Normandy.
Okay? I've been there. I've seen the cemetery.
Well, that's it. The opening 20... That's all I was trying to mention.
Then you got to viciously...
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah, but then you got to go after Trump.
I do, because he sullied the whole...
How did he do that?
His mere presence sullies everything.
Oh, stop it.
Anyway, Danny, what about the Bruins?
You're just mad because he got more hair than you.
You're the one who voted for him.
I did.
Nice job.
Yeah, how's the economy?
You're going to vote for him again?
Yeah. How's the economy?
Going to vote for him again?
Have you seen the list of Democrats?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Danny, what's up with the Bruins?
What show are you watching?
What's up with the Bruins, Danny?
My mom just turned 100 a month ago, right?
Wow.
Triple digits.
I got to get by and see her.
She was the angelic one of the family. She never swore a day in her life. And now in her old age, with a little bit of mild dementia here and there, man, I'll tell you, she's letting the F-bombs go. Unbelievable.
Well, at least you feel comfortable.
I understand.
Listen, I gave mine up for Lent 10 years ago, Larry. No more F-bombs for me.
What's going on the sports show?
I'm gonna start renaming the Boston Bruins the Boston Puck Passers, okay? Because forget about the penalty that should have been called, and the local news media, please stop covering the team, okay? Especially Channel 7, it's a joke. Chelsea McDonald sounds like a two-year-old. They're blaming that call on the game. The Bruins had ample opportunities. They dominated on the power play. How many shots did they get on net? Pasternak had a point-blank shot on net, and he chose to pass it to the corner.
They keep
when
doing
they do that.
That,
they don't win. That's it. That goalie could be had. That goalie's not that good.
I agree.
It's a mediocre goalie.
Yep.
Put it on net, get a rebound, and pull it in there.
Danny, I agree. I think Bennington is vulnerable. But one of the things the Blues have been able to do is clear the puck from that area. They've done it very well.
When you dominate the possession time in the zone and you pass the puck and then all of a sudden you don't get a shot on net, that's how it's working. St. Louis could be had. The Bruins beat themselves to blame the game on the non-call. They were losing at the point anyways. No one knew they was going to tie the game up.
Right, and you could also make a case that it was a five-hole goal that Tuukka could have stopped.
Well, be that as it may, it got deflected and went through the five hole, right?
Right.
I mean, it was a deflected shot.
He could have stopped. I'm not claiming I wouldn't put it on him. I mean, certainly the bad call or non-call was more contributing to that goal than the five hole. But still, they have gotten beat 5-on-5.
The whole year, this team played shooting the puck. The times they didn't, they did a couple of times against Columbus and Toronto, those are the times. And 2013 was a classic example on the cloud. They didn't shoot the puck on that. They overpassed the puck. That's it. That's the bottom line. Shoot the friggin' puck. Always.
Now he's swearing. It's unbelievable.
Oh, I didn't say the other word.
Well, everybody knows what when you say friggin'. I love when people do that.
We
when
know
you
what
say
the word
friggin',
is.
Everybody knows what the word is.
I know. And that bothers me. Kids do it all the time in my classroom. I said, you know what? Just take the word out of your lexicon.
Do they
lexicon.
Ever say mustard, you?
All the time. When didn't they say it? That was the problem.
Wow.
617-779. What's the telephone number, Lou? Would you give out the number?
617-779-7937.
Mustard and Johnson returns right after this.
Shoot the friggin' puck!
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's get you back to more of Mustard and Johnson on Sports Radio WEEI.
I wish I could use the word on radio, but I don't.
Oh, come on.
I don't swear anyway.
Come on.
It's a pain in the behind.
Oh.
All those years when you produced our show, you were lying. And I'm. The only friend I got in the morning is Jerry, anyway.
He was fired.
Although Mutt, I got to give Mutt a thank you. And analyze, I do listen to the hockey show on Sunday mornings.
Oh, the Ken Laird hockey show?
Yeah,
not anymore, though,
I won't
apparently.
Not anymore.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
So then they won't have any listeners. So.
Poor Ken, you know, he was the ultimate unctuous flatterer when he was our producer, Larry. It was, yes, sir. He
nice,
called you Mr.
Nice,
Johnson.
Nice show, guys.
Yeah, always going out of his way, on his knees, complimenting each and every show, claiming we should have had a regular weekday gig. He couldn't understand why. Then he gets in with Callahan and Mutt, and all he does...
Rips the living daylights
that's all he
out
cares.
Of us.
That's all he cares about. It's a platform to go after you. Right. It's personal character assassination.
Right. What time is your hockey
that
guy
I'm
on?
Not putting I'm not putting up with anymore.
What time is your hockey guy? Because we're busy. I got an agenda going on here.
No, this is a guy that has to put up with Ken Laird each and every week, which is hard for me to believe. Matt Callum, my first question is, forget about the Bruins and that terrible call on Thursday night. How do you handle a guy like Ken Laird? It must be terrible.
Oh, Ken's great. He just lets me talk, so I have no problems with Ken.
So, by the way, I haven't listened lately. Has he been taking shots at Johnson on that show, too?
Well, we weren't taking shots at Johnson until I heard him taking shots at us. I mean, saying there's no energy on the show? My God.
Who keeps each other awake?
Whoa!
If I bring any more energy, the station's going to fall down. I mean, Jesus, you know, what goes on Saturday mornings and weekdays, they can't handle me.
Yeah, throw in a little profanity and you'll be fine.
You know, first it was Andy Hart and Mark with a C. Now it's Larry Johnson versus Ken Laird. It's getting to be a really bad place to work.
Is St. Louis playing the way the Bruins used to play?
For sure. At the very least, they're at least being the initiators of everything that's going on, whether it's, you know, just good old clean cocky or whether it's them taking some extra shots at people.
I like
the way the Bruins used to be. Yeah, I mean, if the roles are reversed, people in this town would be already, you know, parading around on a duck boat.
Is that what's wrong with their first line, Brad and company? They're just getting beat up all the time?
Well, I mean, there's a lot to it. I mean, there's just their strategy and their physicality, and they don't seem to be able to answer either one. And it's kind of disappointing to see them not being the aggressors, them being the recipients of all this instead of, you know, taking the initiative to the Blues and playing the way they can play and the way they're usually successful.
So who's beating who up? I mean, do the Bruins have any enforcers?
Well, it's not about having enforcers. It's about having, you know, initiative, having all four lines just playing straight line hockey and trying to make some plays and actually, you know, making some contact on your own without just withstanding the checks. I mean, especially the defensemen on this team, Charlie McAvoy in particular, they seem to enjoy getting hit instead of once in a while sidestepping a check here or there. It's unbelievable. They just stand in there and take the hits, and I think it's taking its toll. But, you know, in the one game I would say that they played their best, which was game three. That was where they were, you know, sidestepping the checks and avoiding contact and every once in a while initiating their own contact. And that's how you neutralize a team like St. Louis, and they haven't done it.
Well, they neutralized them because they were on the power play so often. And, of course, you've got to give them credit for taking advantage of it. But Berube might have lost the battle, but he seemed to have won the war. They've officiated the series differently, at least in my perspective. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, you know, I think the bigger problems with officiating have gone against the Bruins, but there's been terrible calls both ways. And, you know, even when Berube said that stuff, it was kind of puzzling because the Bruins had, you know, hadn't had that many more power plays than the Blues had. You know, the Blues don't score on the power play,
right.
So
okay.
It looks worse.
Yep, true.
But nonetheless, it worked, right? He obviously got what he wanted in a way. At the very least, he's in the Bruins' brains because not only is the coach, you know, out there whining about it, but the players are whining about it. And it's kind of, it's poor form, I think, on the Bruins' part to be doing this. And you have to hope that the 2 days off between games kind of helps them reset mentally because they're clearly not focused properly here.
Are the Bruins too busy trying to get the perfect goal? Like, they seem to pass
absolutely
more than shooting.
I mean, there's no better sign of that than in game four when Brad Marchand had no shots on goal. I mean, you're going to tell me he didn't have enough looks to get a couple of shots on, and then, you know, game five he got a little more aggressive. They didn't score in the first period, and they seemed to get discouraged, and then the coach started mixing up the lines, and everything seemed to come discombobulated. But yeah, I mean, the whole series, it's bizarre because this goaltender is beatable. I mean, he gives up rebounds like crazy. He seems to be, you know, flappable. When you score a goal on him, he throws his head back like it's the end of the world. You could probably get in his head a little bit physically if you tried to intimidate him the way the Blues tried to do with Tuca. And the Bruins have kind of completely left Binnington off the hook. And that's the worst part of it, too, because usually the Bruins are pretty good. We saw with guys like Bobrovsky and the Carolina goaltenders that they were able to get in these guys' faces.
One of the things, and you've probably seen this, is one of the things Binnington has done throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs, he did it in the finals, he's done it earlier, is he's given up multiple goal games. He's given up a five spot, and he's able to come back the next game. And she's shown a lot of resilience on the psychological front, and you'd think the Bruins would be able to take advantage of it at some point in this series. I've been saying all morning, maybe you agree, maybe you don't, Matt, that don't you think the Blues are going to have a little more pressure this time? It's easy to win three. Yeah. We've seen it before, but can you win four? Toronto wasn't able to do it, and you got to feel that maybe the Bruins maybe have an edge, even though they're down in this series, because they know St. Louis, there's going to be a lot of pressure to end this 50-year-old drought.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it lots of times with teams like this, and you said most recently with Toronto, the teams that don't have the experience closing out playoff series, they get home, their crowd is all over them, and they put a lot of pressure on themselves and don't come through. The difference this time is that, you know, in the Toronto series, the Bruins, I mean, I'm not even putting it on the best players. None of the Bruins players, except for maybe Marcus Johansson, are playing well. You know, maybe Charlie Coyle, you throw him in there too, but they're not playing well. So if the experience factor doesn't really play in your advantage, if you're not playing well, and they've given them, you know, indication that they're planning to change the way they're playing, as far as the fact that, you know, they score one goal the last game, they have no points except for that one goal from DeBrusk from their top six. And so if you're not playing well, the experience gets thrown out the window, but you have to hope that maybe they could suddenly turn it around, but they've given you no indication that that's going to happen in this series.
Well, they were able to take advantage of the Sundquist suspension in game number three. Are they going to be able to do the same thing with Barbashev's suspension coming out, Barbashev coming back and taking advantage of a guy that's sitting on the sidelines and going out and win a game?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it actually missed Sundquist in that game because he's a good penalty killer, and because the Blues like to match up their fourth line against the Bergeron line, so if that line's a little bit weaker, maybe it doesn't have the same chemistry without Barbashev. Maybe it plays in their hands, but we'll see how it goes, because it doesn't seem like any matchup is a easy one for the Bergeron line right now.
Hey, Matt, last question for me. How does this switching the lines up work for you? Is it working or not really?
No, I think it's terrible. I think, you know, Marcus Johansson and Charlie Coyle, like I said, are your best two players, and they're playing their best when they're together. So basically, Bruce Cassidy should be starting his lineup with those two guys, and then you plug everybody else around them. And, you know, if Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak can't get it together as a line at this point, then you just have to lose that way. You have to go down fighting with your best lines. And that was the best line in hockey all year. It has to come through, and if it doesn't, you know, you just chalk it up. If you keep mixing guys up and throwing guys out there, you're never going to find the right chemistry.
All right, Matt. So when's the show tomorrow morning? What time?
Tomorrow at 7 o'clock, Sunday skate. I will be on a flight to St. Louis, so I will not be bringing my energy, but I'm sure Ken and Pete Blackburn will be lighting things up for you.
Oh, boy. All right, Matt. We're going to miss you. Enjoy your flight out to St. Louis, and let's see if the Bruins can get back into this series and send it back home for a Game 7. Thanks a lot.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Matt. All right, Matt Kelman of Sunday Skate, our Bruins reporter for WEEI.com, right here on Sports Radio WEEI. Let's do some phones. I'm going to be talking to Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated a little bit to close out the show, but do some phones before then. We go to Peter in JP, who's next on Sports Radio WEEI.
Hey, Peter.
Guys, how you doing? I go back at least 30 years. Have you been on the air for 30 years?
We're going to put you on hold just for a second, only because I can't hear you. I think he wants to rip me for something.
Okay. Oh, good. We'll definitely get him back.
Okay, let's go to Brad on the Bruins from San Diego. All right, Brad, what's going on?
Thank you, gentlemen. Hey. Great to talk to you. Great to hear you, Larry.
Great. Love La Jolla.
Love it.
Love it.
I wanted to just kind of pinpoint with the Bruins, what I see from my experience and being a lover of all Boston sports from the day I was born, practically. The bottom line here is we need to meet and exceed the intensity and physicality to hoist Gord Stanley's Cup.
Yep, no question.
Very simple.
Do you think they're playing? Do you think they're playing with that much intensity?
At moments they are, but they don't sustain it.
Because they're getting the tar knocked out of them on a regular basis. It's not about will. It's not about an intensity. It's about will. And they can't sustain it for 60 minutes because the other team is beating them to every puck, every hit, every check. And, you know, we have this argument over the years, Larry and I have about, oh, that team came out flat. No, you come out flat when you get flattened by the other team. And that's been the problem for the Bruins in this series.
Exactly.
Right.
And you know, to Bruce Cassidy's defense, I understand where he's coming from, but you can't get on the grand stage and point that out because it does you no good.
Well, it worked for Berube after Game 3, complaining about all the power plays for the Bruins. And Berube, the series has been called differently.
Berube did it very nonchalantly and very, you know, tongue-in-cheek. And he backed, and he just moved on. What Bruce did was he was, you know, and don't think that I didn't feel the way Bruce felt, because I feel like that's a black eye to the NHL, to officiating in the NHL, because to me, in all of the major sports, the NHL officiating has been superb, period.
I wouldn't go as far as superb. That might be going a little bit too far. Before we take the break, just want get John in quickly. We're going to be talking to Chris Mannix to close out the show. John, your comments on that penalty or non-penalty in Thursday night's game?
Clearly a penalty, and it should have been called. But he flopped, too. And other than Jerry Kelly, I didn't listen to the afternoon show. He flopped.
That was a high flop. He went. It was way up
you
in the
air. You watch it again. The guy clearly takes out his left leg. And then, as much as one can do on one skate, he leaps and throws his body back. You watch it again. It was clearly a penalty.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
But he flopped, too. And that's the only explanation I can come up with why the guy didn't call it.
Well, what else? And the Bruins have been selling penalties for quite some time, quote-unquote, selling penalties. And after a while, sometimes if you're an official, it's difficult to distinguish between what is real and what isn't.
Right. And on a separate note, Larry, you know, I try to keep to a minimum my prison stories, but in walking the rec yard, I've never heard such vile and disgusting language is what I used to hear in the prison yard from your partner today.
You know,
a lot of times
I feel like I'm in prison.
I can't believe I uttered actually the S word on the air live, which I've never done.
I'm not surprised.
In over 4 years of broadcasting.
My illusions are shattered, Craig.
I know. The
my
legend crumbles. The legend crumbles right before your very ears. 617-779-7937. We're going to get the lowdown on Kyrie with Chris Mannix coming up right after this.
Mustard and Johnson are rocking the Saturday Sports Talk on Sports Radio WEEI.
From what I've been able to learn, if Kyrie Irving walks, it is not going to diminish their appetite to go get Anthony Davis.
That's interesting.
They are still, I think, going to be aggressive with Davis. Now, I don't know what that means, whether it means they would include Jason Tatum in a Davis deal, but from what I understand, they're not going to take their foot off the gas when it comes to pursuing Anthony Davis.
All right. That is Kevin Mannix on his, not Kevin Mannix, that's Chris. His uncle, Chris Mannix, of course, from Sports Illustrated. He has a podcast. Who doesn't? I think we're the only two people on the planet who don't, called Crossover. For more on that and what the Celtics need to do to get AD, keep Kyrie in line, the man himself, Chris, not Kevin Mannix, right here on Sports Radio WEEI. Good morning.
I'm trying to think, guys, did I use enough cliches in that podcast?
Did he
put off the gas?
Ooh, I like it. But backed with,
I
backed with Jumpin' Jack Flash. It's a gas. It all came together there, Chris.
That was nice.
Yeah, very nice. So why don't you elaborate a little on that? You still think the Celtics have a shot at keeping Kyrie, and what are their chances of landing AD?
You know, the chances of keeping Kyrie, at least in as you learn more every single day about what Kyrie is thinking and, you know, what the Celtics are thinking and how they feel about it, they seem to diminish every day. Now, the Celtics will still make an aggressive offer for him. And I believe the conversation at some point, if it hasn't already, will include a mention of, look, if you come back, we'll go all out to get Anthony Davis and pair him with you. So as frustrating as last year's team was to Kyrie Irving, and vice versa, of course, it would be a different team altogether. But there was a lot of, I don't know what the right word to use it there, but you know, whether it's friction or internal issues with Kyrie last year, it was just kind of an oil and water mix, whether it was with his teammates. He and Brad Stevens, I've written a couple of times, they had a relationship at times last year. So I think that the idea that Kyrie will stay gets less and less likely as we get closer to free agency. I don't think it's off the table yet, because the Celtics can still make that five-year offer. And for a guy that's coming off multiple knee surgeries in the last few years, that could be significant. But when it comes to Kyrie Irving, I get less and less optimistic for Boston's chances every day.
As a Celtics fan, would you want him back?
I would. If I was a Celtic fan, I would absolutely want a player of his caliber in uniform. I mean, the impact of stars is huge. I mean, we're seeing it in this series right now with Kawhi Leonard. Mm. I mean, the Raptors were a very good team without Kawhi Leonard. They might have had a shot at making the finals, maybe, without Kawhi Leonard, but they wouldn't be in this series without him. They wouldn't be one game away from winning a championship without him. I mean, stars make big plays, and they can carry you in big situations. And Kyrie Irving is a bona fide star. I think Boston, without Kyrie, might be a more likable team than they were this past year. They might be an as-successful regular-season team, but you'll never convince me that they're any closer to a championship with somebody else but Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, and I agree with that school of thought. That's the logical, rational analysis. But, you know, they're fans for a reason, and I have yet to find one, Chris, just the average fan who wants to see Kyrie in green next year.
Yeah, but, like, those same fans, and, like, you know, I'm sure half of them are my friends from the neighborhood. Like, they want Isaiah Thomas back, too. Like, it's not a rational line of thought there. I mean, look, Kyrie's not, you know, the Celtics went from, you know, this scrappy, underachieving team with a point guard that came out of nowhere and that they embraced fully in Isaiah Thomas to one that was kind of a formed entity in Kyrie Irving that went about things in a different way. And that's a big part of this, too. You know, the culture of Boston didn't mesh too well with Kyrie Irving. Kyrie came from an atmosphere in Cleveland where they just sleepwalked through the regular season. They didn't care what seed they were. They didn't care about who they played in respective rounds. They didn't care all that much about kind of how they were playing in the regular season, because they believed, you know, based on evidence, that they could flip a switch and be great in the playoffs. Boston doesn't operate that way. Brad Stevens doesn't operate that way. They are a team that believes in process, that believes in you know, getting better every single day and building towards something. That's not how Kyrie kind of operates. Now, I think he's going to, if he goes somewhere else, I mean, let's use Brooklyn for an example. They're the same type of team. I don't think he's going to find too many situations that are like playing with LeBron James outside of playing with LeBron James. I think is a long shot. So I think that's going to be problematic for him. But that was a factor in all this, that Kyrie, you know, just didn't mesh with the way Boston liked to do things.
All right. So
what does Celtics sign and trade him?
Sign and trades, and it's, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, because I get some of it wrong, but about 7 years ago, I think 2011, whenever the last, you know, work stoppage was,
they include some language to make sign and trades almost impossible. Yeah. Like, you just don't see, like, the last one, I can't even remember, a real sign and trade. You just don't do them anymore.
Yeah, all the experts have tried to explain it, and it's difficult, but you can't do it. And I think that's obviously the Celtics will not be able to do it. So what about these players? Where does Kawhi go next year?
You know, if they win this thing, I have a hard time seeing Kawhi walk away. I don't know that he signs a long-term deal with Toronto, but I could see him signing a 2+1 type of deal with the Raptors that would maximize the rest of this core, that he could play two more years if he wanted to with Kyle Lowry, who's in his 30s, with Marc Gasol, who's in his 30s. Serge Ibaka, I think, is 30. He could be even older. I mean, people don't have any idea how old Serge Ibaka really is. This is like the core of that team. He could put together another run, then hit free agency. I think he turns 28, I want to say, next week or next month or something like that. He could hit free agency at age 30 and still be able to get that four-year max-level contract from somebody else. So I think if they win this thing, my gut feeling is he could come back for a short-term deal.
What about should Durant be out there?
I mean, I never tell a guy what he can go through. I mean, that it's not like when Marcus Smart goes out there and plays through some stuff, he's playing through pain and not the risk of injury. When you're dealing with a calf injury, you know, for everything, all the people I've talked to, I mean, it's the kind of thing that could get significantly worse and the kind of thing that could lead to something even worse, you know, whether it's an Achilles injury or something else. So it's clearly a significant calf strain. I've talked to some people that believe it's, you know, and during this time of year, you know, teams tend to lie about the severity of injuries. They don't want to reveal anything and, you know, shut any doors on a guy coming back. I wouldn't be surprised after the fact if we hear that there might become some kind of small tear or something like that. I'm not basing that on anybody I've talked to out there, but just the history of how injuries like this are dealt with in the public sphere. I think he's trying everything he can do. I think he's doing everything he possibly can to get out there on the floor. This injury is just so significant that he can't play through it.
So here's the question. Has he played his last game as a Golden State Warrior?
Hey, again, gut feeling, I would say yes. I think Golden State, you know, I don't think they're going to give up without a fight. And, you know, I think that all the friction that exists within that locker room during the year, I think that'll get tossed out the window as these guys look at the reality of playing without Kevin Durant and what that could mean for their championship hopes over the next few years. Like we've seen when they're healthy, they're still an elite team. But without Kevin Durant, they're a vulnerable team. And they can't score when their offense isn't kind of moving the ball really well and clicking on all cylinders. So I think they're going to make a hard pitch. And one thing I've learned about Durant over the years, especially from his last big significant round of meetings after he left Oklahoma City, he can be influenced in the room. Like, he thinks stuff is cool. Like, he thought Tom Brady showing up was cool. And he's going to be – when you see the Clippers get into a meeting with him and they present Doc Rivers and Lawrence Frank, who's going to have a lot of high-level executives, smart basketball people around him, Steve Ballmer, one of the few owners in this league that are an asset in those meetings, I think they're going to be a factor there too. So I think he's gone. I think he probably goes to New York. But, you know, that's one you can't be certain of with Durant until he gets in those meetings.
Hey, last question from me. What kind of player should we expect if they get Anthony Davis?
I mean, the top five player in this league and a guy that is still improving, I think. You know, the last couple of years, Anthony Davis has developed into a three-point shooter. I mean, most bigs in this league have, but Anthony Davis was already, you know, pretty lethal off the dribble, had a nice low post game, a defensive menace who could play two positions out there on the floor. But offensively, I think there's another level he can get to. He can become an even better scorer as he continues to layer the three-point shot onto his game. He's been coached really well these last couple of years with Alvin Gentry in New Orleans and Darren Erman, who's an assistant coach people in Boston are familiar with. He's done a really nice job working with him as well. So I think he's a great player who's only going to get better.
But what are the percentages that he comes to Boston? That's the question.
I think it all depends on whether Danny Ainge is willing to throw Jason Tatum into a deal. And that's – look, the Celtics, if Kyrie Irving goes – they didn't really lose much. I mean, they traded Isaiah, who couldn't play anymore, and what turned out to be the eighth pick in the draft in Colin Sexton. Like, you live with that. That's a very low-risk, high-reward type of gamble. If you trade Jason Tatum for a guy that could walk after a year, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. If it turns out that, because Anthony Davis is not going to work, it's not going to be just Jason Tatum. It's all your draft picks too. I've said this before. It's a Herschel Walker type of deal for Anthony Davis. If you do all that without any kind of guarantee that Davis comes back and Davis walks, you're back to square one. Everything you've accomplished in that Brooklyn Nets deal, it's gone. It's out the window. You are right back to your starting point and starting.
Baseball, thanks for a few minutes.
Hey, Chris, thanks a lot.
We'll check you out down the line.
You got it, guys.
All right, Chris Mannix from Sports Illustrated. And we are out of here. Next week, Mark James will be back with his new co-host, Andy Hart. Ken Laird has some probably take another opportunity to blast Larry Johnson on the pregame coming up.
Can you close out the show with some profanity?
I started with it. I might as well end, but I'll just call Ken Laird, you. No, I can't do it. I cannot do it. Thanks to Eamon on the other side of the glass. Have a good weekend, everybody. Red Sox baseball next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.